Well, howdy friends, we're back with another episode of Slap or Nap. I'm joined, as always, by Shelby.
Howdy, folks.
And Riley.
Hello.
And anything interesting happened this week, boys?
Tom and Jerry, that's about it.
yeah, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
I interviewed for a job, but that's my own personal exciting news. So.
Hooray, well that's what we asked, so hey. Your life has things going on.
Yay! my life has nothing going on. I had to call out of work on Wednesday because I had a really bad migraine.
Oh yeah, you told me that. You said you couldn't see anything.
Yeah, I was having trouble seeing. We love it.
I hate it because I had a migraine and couldn't see literally a few days ago.
Yeah. And then Sarah apparently has a headache today, too, so I don't know.
We've all got COVID. We'll just...
Oh, no.
Oh, that better not be the case, considering right now, anyway.
Yeah.
but yeah, we watched Tom and Jerry this week, guys.
We sure did.
Ooh. We sure did.
It came out on the 26th,
yes.
I believe.
26th of February.
Yes.
And it will be on HBO Max until the end of March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
This... movie other than starring Tom as Tom and Jerry as Jerry has Chloe Grace Moretz, who I have not seen in a movie in years.
Yeah, it's been a while for her.
And Michael Peña, who most recently is known for the Ant-Man films, I would say.
Yeah.
In terms of big stuff.
Is he the guy? Did he play Luigi? Or was that? No, that was John Leguizamo. Mm-hmm.
Luigi in the Mario?
Super, yeah, in the Super Mario.
That movie came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
But, and starred John Leguizamo.
Relevant.
Yeah.
Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins.
Well, that's what I'm asking. It was John Leguizamo, right?
Yeah, it was not Michael Peña.
Okay. And directed by Tim Story.
Yeah. The legendary director behind 2005's Fantastic Four. as well as the ride-along series with Kevin Hart and Ice Cube.
Ooh. So
quite a varied filmography there.
So Michael Peña, sorry, I looked it up since we were all talking about it. Michael Peña's most recent movie that name caught my attention was Dora in the Lost City of
Gold. That's right. Yeah, he was in that.
Oh, all right.
I didn't see that.
And Fantasy Island last year in 2020.
Alrighty. This movie had a budget of $79 million. Do you guys want to guess how much it's made so far at the box office?
$12 billion.
Well, you spoiled it for yourself, so I'm not even gonna pretend.
I'm sorry, I know what it is.
That was too big.
I have no clue. I imagine pretty high.
Not as high as you would think. It only made 39.7 million of its budget.
Oh wow, only 39.7 million.
We have to remember
out
that
of a $79 million movie. Yeah, you know, kind of disappointing.
We have to remember that we are living in a pandemic.
Yeah,
right.
And also take into account that a lot of numbers aren't going to show up as numbers because it's streaming, like, you know, the amount of people that have streamed.
Of numbers aren't going to show up as numbers.
Lot of numbers aren't going to show up as dollar sign numbers.
Well, I was going to say, I wonder if a future number they're going to look out for, if this trend continues where they release it on like digital before they do movie releases, is if they check and see how many people sign up for a membership around the same time.
The new subscribers, that typically is like how people kind of judge how successful a thing is going to be. Like for me, being a professional wrestling fan, I know that Peacock recently just acquired the rights to the WWE Network. And so we'll have to see, you know, if that was a successful deal. They bought the rights to the WWE Network for $1 billion to put it on Peacock.
Jeez.
Which is insane. Anyway.
But yeah, if movie releases continue the trend they're going even after the pandemic is over, I imagine it'll be something like how music sales are recorded nowadays, because not a lot of people buy the full album, so now album sales are measured by quote-unquote album equivalent sales, where it's like the amount of songs that people have downloaded from it. If it's enough of a download, then they'll count it as an album sale.
Okay, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
interesting. Okay, anything else you guys got for
I I would say let's do trigger warnings, but really, like, the most we got is just cartoon violence, which
is really tame.
Yeah.
I would say older Tom and Jerry cartoons are more violent, violent than this movie is.
More violent. A lot of stuff from my... I have one thing I want to say about Tom and Jerry. I don't remember Jerry being this big of an asshole in the movie.
I did. Yeah.
He was. No, he was an asshole.
In the show?
He was an asshole, but I don't remember him being this big of one.
No,
like,
there's
it's very specific memories, but it's like, I remember, like, Trickster being, like, kind of, like, annoying. And all,
he was the gray mouse, right?
No.
Jerry? No, he's the main mouse.
Well, who's the little gray mouse?
That's, I don't know, that's, like, his nephew or something.
Yeah, that genuinely is it. Like, that's his nephew that he always takes in.
Oh, okay.
And then you've got Tomcat, and then you've got Spike, who is always the only speaking character, like one of the only few speaking characters in Tom and Jerry.
I always
Tom's
liked Spike.
Tom's owner spoke, but she wasn't in very many cartoons.
Yeah, you have the little itty bitty white baby cat, which I'm not sure if it was a Toots equivalent or no. Toots was a completely different character in the comic. Anyways.
Yeah.
Don't mind me.
No, Jerry was always an asshole. It depends on the cartoon too, but I think a lot of the perception of Jerry as being the cute mischievous mouse comes more from like the modern direct-to-video movies where they're kind of afraid to show Jerry being so much of a dick.
Just being a jerk.
Yeah. So that's actually something I appreciate about this movie is that it's not afraid to let Jerry be like
a jerk.
The actual villain of the movie.
I just remember watching the cartoons growing up and always being like, wow, that was rude, but never like to the extent adult me was sitting there like,
what the hell?
All right. So, we'll get into this a little bit more, obviously, a little bit later on, but let's, if you guys don't have anything else, let's go ahead and jump into this, story.
Oh, quote, unquote. That's me.
Yeah, that's you. That's you this week.
Oh, geez, that's me.
Oh, shoot. All right, I tried to do my best. Please jump in with anything you guys remember. I was watching this at, like, midnight last night.
Yeah. Right, I watched this last week, so I've had some time to sit with it.
Some time to stew. Okay. Yeah.
I watched it yesterday as well.
We'll get into it. So we open with a shot of New York City skyline. We open with some animated pigeons flying, rapping, dancing through the sky like true Looney Tunes. It's already a rough start.
And they rap and it's like, ugh.
I did not enjoy the music
too
choice.
Too much rap in this movie.
I did not enjoy it.
Full disclosure, I like rap and I like hip hop. That is so unfitting for these characters to have such a hip hop focused soundtrack.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Anyways, we're not even past the first scene.
Oh boy.
We see Tom coming to New York City by train with only a piano to his name, eating an apple. We also see Jerry kind of looking for a mouse house shopping. He is currently being shown around New York looking for a place to stay, but with his little budget, he can't really afford much. We get our first trying to reference the cool kids or trying to be, we just get the line, hey, don't you just Batman me, which I was like, I already know the tone of this movie and I'm not enjoying it.
I agree.
We see Tom has some big musical aspirations with his piano and he's trying to make it to the top here in the big city. We get the age-old cat and mouse. Jerry tries to steal Tom's limelight while he's performing in the park as a blind cat who can play the piano. And he tries to get the money in order to get a better place, but Tom is not having it and recognizes Jerry. Which
gave me so much false hope.
Yeah, Tom being a blind cat was very uncomfy for me, by the way. Tom is revealed not to be blind during the ensuing fight with Jerry, and they run through the park chasing after each other, Tom eventually running into Chloe Grace Moretz playing Kayla, although we don't find out her name until later. As Kayla's lecturing him and telling him, like, hey, you could have gotten hurt, are you okay? Tom just gets run over by a van. straight on him.
I remember that actually did make me laugh. It's that good old shock humor. It's good for anything.
Due to the accident with Tom, Tom had scattered Kayla's laundry for her job that she was doing. Kayla actually ends up losing her job and decides to go to the hotel to snag some free cookies, the hotel being where our main plot line is going to happen. Also stealing cookies from a hotel, big mood.
Right.
Yeah.
Free food.
Free food.
Jerry, meanwhile, makes a home for himself at the fancy hotel while Tom tries to chase him in, gets caught up in a cat gang turf war thing. I don't know. They were just trying to throw in as many character references as they could.
Yeah. It's never even really brought up again.
No, not until the end, really.
It's very inconsequential. Anyway.
Anyways. Yeah. While Kayla is at the hotel, she notices this woman sitting in a chair with a suitcase and a stack of files. She's going to be interviewed for the high-profile job of wedding planner for the New York socialite couple Preeta Mehta and her fiancé Ben. Kayla cons this poor woman out of her resume and steals her job. During the scene, we meet two other important characters, Henry Dubrow, who is the owner of the hotel, and then Terrence.
Excuse you, his name is Peter.
All right. Henry Dubrow, played by Peter from Deadpool. Yeah. Deadpool 2.
That's just his name now.
He's only Peter.
All right, fine. So Peter, the owner of the hotel, and then Michael Pena playing Terrence, the event manager of the hotel as well. Kayla gets the job after just pretty much bullshitting her way through it and gets shown around the hotel, getting introduced to the staff.
Because that's how jobs work,
yeah, that's
kids.
Absolutely how jobs work. She sees Jackie the cook. She re-meets Gavin the doorman, who recognizes her from her coming in and stealing food all the time. and he knows she's playing a con, but doesn't say anything. We also meet Joy the bell girl and Cameron the bar guy.
I like Joy.
Joy was fun.
I related to Joy.
Joy was like the only human character I found interesting.
Yeah.
There's one other, but I'll get to
that. Yeah. At this point, we see the happy couple. Preeta and Ben come by to the hotel. They come in with their pets, Looney Tunes favorites, Spike the dog and Toots the white cat.
Spike
the dog from Rugrats.
Kayla wins over the couple by telling them about a quaint off-leash dog park when they were talking about if a dog park Terrence had suggested was quaint or nice, or were the people jerks. And she also catches Toots when Spike spots Jerry out of the corner of his eye and startles everyone when he tries to go after him. Kayla proves herself as a real animal person, which, neato. While all of this is happening, Jerry steals from Preeta's purse, taking a compact and then eventually later her ring, which becomes an important plot point, but I'll just tell you about it now.
Yeah.
It's a vague
and Spike,
point.
Well, but Spike seems to like recognize Jerry, but then seems to not, but then seems to again, and I was very confused by that.
He's racist towards mice. They all look the same to him.
Yes.
Kayla offers to catch the mouse herself once they find out that Jerry steals from Peter's purse and then heads to the kitchen for food, where he startles the kitchen staff. Mm-hmm. When Terrence is trying to comfort Jackie, Kayla offers to catch the mouse herself, him or her. I'm not gender biased, and we get a great line, which is, it's just gender fluid now, which I very much appreciated. We also get the trying to be, talk about how social media is real bad line with tweeted up to Instabookface or TikTok.
Yeah.
Those were the only lines that really made me laugh, so I knew I had to write them down or I'd forget them.
What a way to date your movie in the worst way possible.
We'll talk about it. That's why I wrote it down.
Yeah, that's okay.
I
have a couple lines written down, too.
By the way, Michael Pena, throughout this whole movie, I love him. He's great. He's awesome. But they're really trying hard to make him an antagonist for this, and they kind of succeed. But I don't like him as an antagonist.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with that is that for most of the movie, he's right.
Yeah, he's right. And so that's why it's like, I mean,
it's Barbara from Wonder Woman all over again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, except he doesn't become a cat at the end.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't. That would be a hell of a twist ending.
What a twist.
All right. Kayla sets a trap for Jerry, but while she's talking with Cameron and gets distracted, Jerry overhears them saying, like, oh, it's going to be easy to catch this mouse, and just leaves a bunch of money on the trap.
And says, buy a better trap.
Yeah, you need a better trap, J-Mouse. Tom Newhile is just desolate, heartbroken, with no piano, and is convinced by his little devil on his shoulder to go after Jerry after he spots him in one of the hotel rooms. Dramatic cartoon antics ensue. That's about the most I've
This
got
was
for
the
that
best
scene
in the movie.
This is like, Tom. This is the scene where he's trying to get into his hotel room.
Yes.
Yeah. This scene was fun.
This was a great scene.
I enjoyed this.
I don't want to go too much into detail because I feel like you should at least like experience that scene. But also, it's exact levels of Looney Tunes-esque
shenanigans, so
you know what it is.
The kind of thing that most of this movie should have been, but
yeah.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it.
I focus way too much on the people.
It's Godzilla all over again.
Their fight in the hotel room gets Kayla's attention, and when with Jerry disappearing, Kayla recognizes Tom, and they kind of communicate with each other, and she figures out that he's trying to get to Jerry, so she convinces the hotel to hire Tom to hunt Jerry down.
Yeah.
Give him a little hat and a name tag.
Hey, he pulled off that hat and name tag, okay?
He did. I also just want to point out, like, the rules and logic of this world do stay somewhat consistent, because they're like, we could get in trouble for refusing to hire a cat because it's discrimination.
Yeah.
And I was like, what child would pay attention to that?
I think it's kind of funny, too, that every animal was animated.
Yeah.
There are no real animals.
It creeps me out a little bit, honestly.
I think
it's an uncanny valley.
I like it better than there being animated animals and real animals.
Because
that bothers me a lot. Like with Disney, where like Goofy is a dog, but Pluto is also a dog.
Yeah.
So where is that line
drawn? Yeah, it keeps this like the world internally consistent, but to me it just weirded me out.
Yeah,
was like, where are they?
I get it.
I was just expecting the one scene where it's like they run into like the one real dog in the world, and it just like barks and growls at them, just like that one scene. Anyways, also Michael Pena saying I've clawed my way all the way to the middle was a giant ass mood. There is no top, it's just the middle. We get some good old classics throughout the during this time. Tom accidentally beating up Spike, which was a favorite scene of mine in the cartoons. We get a scene with Toots going after Jerry and nearly succeeding, which was awesome. A lot of cartoon logic. I think at one point we get a giant just elaborate mouse trap thing.
Yeah, Tom sets up like a giant what's it called?
Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, Rube Goldberg machine to catch Jerry.
Which was the only thing that actually worked
to
get Jerry.
Which is funny, because it's such an obvious trap.
Mm-hmm. While Tom is hunting down Jerry, Terrence and Kayla decide to go check up on the married couple. We see a little bit of tension between the two, because Preeta is very obviously overwhelmed, and Ben is just obviously not there, and just adding on to a lot of the stress. While Terrence takes Spike out on a walk, Preeta actually admits to losing her engagement ring and enlists Kayla to help find it.
As if Kayla isn't already doing
doing a lot.
She
for
has
her
so
wedding.
Much to do in this movie. It's not even funny. Yeah. Like, ugh.
Lo and behold, literally the next scene, because Jerry was listening in, the little eavesdropper creep. Jerry actually has the ring. He's using it as a fancy chandelier over his table, which was cute. Right at that moment, that's when we get the Rube Goldberg machine. Tom manages to capture Jerry and get him tossed out of the hotel. And Tom, Cameron, and Kayla decide to celebrate a job well done. The only note I have for this upcoming scene, and I will try and avoid using our one F-bomb, which was, Tom can sing? What the hell?
Yeah. Oh,
I will talk about this.
Yeah.
It has haunted my dreams.
Yeah. Tom sings with an auto-tune voice. He spotted Toots and started playing the piano and singing. It's ruined my entire life. Don't watch it.
The auto-tune is ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you want me to be excited about your Tom and Jerry movie, don't do that thing.
Yeah. No, thank you.
I appreciate that Tom doesn't talk, for this movie except for that scene. Mm-hmm. And then in the scene that he does, well, he sings, he doesn't talk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in the scene where he does, it's the worst scene in the movie.
Yeah. It's like, it also like really ruins its own internal logic because like they've established that like if an animal can talk, it will talk. And if an animal doesn't want to talk, it won't talk. And so then they ruin it with having Tom sing because he's already established as a character that won't talk. Sorry, I'm...
It's okay.
No, it's fair. Yeah. They're stepping on what we grew up with. It makes sense.
Well, Tom does talk occasionally, but not like full sentences. Yeah. He just like, will say like random words and stuff.
Yeah. You get screams of pain. You also get like shouts and all that sort of stuff. But you really don't get into talk.
Yeah.
Also, sorry, this is like my major like nostalgia. Like, nobody's allowed to touch this. This is my own.
Quick aside, fun piece of trivia. Mm-hmm. All of Tom's noises that he makes, like his screams and his yells and stuff,
are from the original.
Yeah, they're all stock sounds from his original like voice actors.
I love that. That's a good detail.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. We find out Jerry actually managed to break out of the international shipping crate that Tom had managed to shove him into, and is bugging Tom at the piano, interrupts the singing. At that moment, Terrence comes back in with Spike. Terrence starts to scold Kayla and Tom for just being at the bar. But at that point, Tom starts to chase Jerry. Spike decides to start chasing Tom, and the whole bar and hotel get destroyed due to it all. And we get back into the lovely dome atrium window thing
that they were complimenting not 20 minutes earlier.
Yeah, they were saying was the pride and joy of the hotel. And the fight just comes crashing down through it.
Kids movie, you know.
Yeah.
Can't be too subtle, I guess.
Yeah. During all that chaos, Kayla realizes Peter's ring got left in her pocket. Jerry had hidden in her pocket, which had caused Tom to start chasing Jerry. But now she has Peter's ring, so I guess one problem solved now. Terrence gets blamed for the mess and forced to leave, with Kayla promoted to his role instead. Kayla now completely overwhelmed and overrun.
Again, that's how jobs work, folks.
absolutely. Kayla, now with more power, strikes a deal with Tom and Jerry that they can stay at the hotel if they prove they can behave, and tells them to stay away from the hotel for the day, so that way the wedding can go off without a hitch.
And then we get Tom and Jerry being friends for like 5 minutes, which is something I don't want.
It's consistent, but not in the movie.
It's fine.
Anyways,
they want them to get hitched without a hitch.
Anyways. Kayla is in the staff room trying to address everybody's concerns, confirming that the mouse is indeed gone, with big old air quotes, and we get an elephant in the room joke with Cameron coming in and saying, Kayla, I think we need to talk about the elephant. She's like, I already did. The mouse is gone. No, the elephants.
The actual elephants.
Yeah, Ben does not know how to chill and has ordered a bunch of stuff for this huge upscale wedding, including elephants for them to ride in on. He also got a drone, which is introduced in this around this time as well, to fly around and take pictures for everybody during the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
While all this is going on, Kayla and Preeta talk about the engagement and the wedding. Preeta is very overwhelmed, very unhappy with everything going on, but says like, oh, I love Ben. She admits they don't really fight anymore. They just avoid everything to not have disagreements.
That's pretty toxic.
Yeah, that's not a healthy relationship. I would know. Yeah. Anyways, Tom and Jerry ruin a baseball game and get locked up at the pound, which, this is when we get to see the cat gang again, clearly having gotten caught from earlier in the movie, and try and force Tom to eat Jerry, and he almost does.
Puts him in his mouth.
But I think he was planning on just hiding him there, which is why everybody kept saying chew, chew, chew.
Mm-hmm.
Also, these alley cats have no reason to exist in this movie. I know they're from the cartoon. I know they existed in the cartoons, but their presence in this movie makes absolutely no difference.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, they were really trying to get as many character references as they could.
Yeah, because then Michael Peña comes and gets them, and then we never see the alley cats again after this, right?
Yeah. Never see them again.
Ugh.
All right. While they're locked up, Terrence sees that they disrupted the ball game on TV and comes to visit them at the pound and interrogates them one at a time and convinces the other to hate each other again, which doesn't take much. The one line I remember was he told Jerry that Tom thinks Jerry is emotionally unavailable, yeah. Which that's the one insult you can come up with for Jerry. But he convinces them to turn against each other and brings them both to the wedding in order to sabotage it all. What are you guys playing footsie down there? What are you doing?
He's trying to get a soda.
It's a water. Excuse you.
Jeez.
It's a soda water.
Jeez Louise.
It's a peach flavored bubbly.
So I guess you could say it's soda water.
Anyways, my dudes. Wedding is going off. Elephants spot Jerry, which freaks them out because I forgot.
There's also a tiger here now.
Yeah, there's also just a tiger at the front of the wedding.
If you can imagine an animal, it's probably here.
Yeah. There's peacocks. There's just there's so much going on.
There's probably
on.
A bat in there somewhere.
And an anteater.
An aardvark.
Yeah. An aardvark.
An aardvark.
Arthur's here.
Arthur, what are you doing?
I always forget he's an aardvark.
But Tiger have to scare Spike, which was one scene I really giggled at because I love it. Which was also very cathartic for Itty Bitty Me because I always cheered on Tom, not Spike.
That's fair.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry. I'm deep in the nostalgia right now.
Yeah.
In the aftermath, wedding is destroyed. Elephants have taken down the street. Prita is heartbroken and decides to call off her engagement with Ben and gives the ring back.
She says, sayonara, silly goose.
But
she doesn't actually say that.
No.
No. Kayla comes clean about who she was. My dude. Kayla comes clean and admits, like, she lied to get the job. Nothing about her resume is true. Terrence has some good cathartic feelings about it. And she just takes off. Her and Cameron decide to meet up later anyways, though. Which, yeah, I thought they were going to go romance with them, but I guess not.
I mean, we'll get there.
Anyways.
They don't go anywhere at all.
Also, you need to see the scene. During, like, the messy scene, all, like, Kayla coming clean, there's just Tom with a broom trying to sweep it all up. And it was so cute.
What a mood.
It's just, like...
If you've ever worked at retail where things go wrong, you've been in his situation before.
Oh my god, you try cleaning champagne off hardwood floor in the middle of a rush. It's... Sorry.
It's okay.
Retail brain.
It's okay.
Anyways, we get some sad scenes of Kayla and Tom being forced out of the hotel. Tom thrown out like the alley cat. Tom and Jerry meet up and are like, I'm sorry, I guess, in a way. And they both decide to reach out to Kayla and decide to fix everything with a makeshift wedding. They both work together to chase down Prita as she's driving down to JFK to fly home. We get an epic skateboard chase. We get an epic drone flying. It's weird. We get a very beautiful and cute wedding setup. Kayla convinces Prita to marry Ben, and they get married. It's very cute and sweet. My heart melted. Terrence and Linda have a weird moment. By the way, Linda was the lady who got conned out of the job.
Yes.
Kayla brings her back and says, you can hire her. And Henry Dubrow says, oh yeah, you can show up to work tomorrow too.
Yeah.
Because apparently Kayla is just
it's all just hired now.
Because remember, that's how jobs work.
Yeah, that's how this economy works. She got the job, both gals did. Tom and Jerry have a moment at the buffet, but Tom tries to impress Miss Toots and Jerry intervenes and they just continue to ruin weddings for all. And yeah, that's about it. Oh, and we also get an end credit scene where Ben, the fiance, got charged for both weddings.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I did not watch that far.
I don't blame you.
I only knew about it because I read it. I pulled up the wiki just to check up stuff, and it said there's an end credit scene. So
we love that.
Yay. Right.
Well, thank you for doing the story notes on that, Shelby. Is there anything you would like to add before we jump into our next little spot here?
Not really. I think everybody's already got all my feelings on this, so let's just keep going.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, all right. Well, I guess that's my turn then. I've got text specs, color grading, animation.
This is going to be a short segment, isn't it?
Yeah. None of it looks good. No. Like, I'm sorry.
None.
The animation looks fine. The animation itself looks fine.
No, I disagree. I absolutely disagree. I think it would have been a lot better if they had been 2D.
Yeah, I agree.
But the animals being 3D, it was absolutely the wrong choice.
I agree. But I think the look they chose, even though I personally wouldn't have used it, looks fine for what it is. I will say that it does not mesh with the real life actors at all.
No.
And you can tell that this has nothing to do with the quality of the animation itself. But you can tell the actors are really uncomfortable acting against nothing.
Especially Chloe.
She looks so uncomfortable.
Yeah, you can tell that she's never done anything like this before.
Yeah.
And she also mentioned in interviews that this movie made her a better actress.
Hey, fair play.
There you go.
But yeah, I just...
It would have been way better as 2D.
So uninteresting to look at. I did not enjoy it. I did like the set design on the hotel, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I like the bar. Oh.
The bar was gorgeous.
Bar was beautiful.
Yeah, I would love to drink there.
I would absolutely love to drink there. And I mean, other than the fact that I have a weird thing about hotel get-ups,
explain your
like,
weird
I'm things. Sorry, guys, but the costuming on Chloe Grace Moretz in this movie. But that's because I have a thing with Chloe Grace Moretz. It's fine.
You just got a thing for
that's
blondes.
Fair. Can understand that.
Yeah.
Not my type, but that's okay.
Yeah. I just and she looks fantastic in this movie, but the costuming is very bland, except for there's one spot where for some reason Kayla is trying on Preeta's bridesmaid's dress.
Why for reasons.
So they talked about it earlier. They were trying to figure out color for bridesmaid dresses. So I think.
But why does she have to be wearing the dress to judge its color?
My question with that is.
I'm guessing she wanted to see it against a white girl.
Because
also consider this is an Indian wedding.
My question. Justin's losing it over here. My question with that would be, if she wanted somebody to try on her dress, why is it the person that works at the hotel and not, like...
the bridesmaid?
Yeah.
One, bridesmaids probably weren't there yet. Two, Kayla can't exactly say no because there's a power dynamic.
That is...
Also, Kayla just found her wedding ring or her engagement ring for her, and they're supposed to imply there's a friendship there now.
I mean, I understand that there's supposed to be a friendship here, but again, it all comes back to the pacing, which is in the writing segment.
It's so weird.
It's so fast. Everything happens so fast.
But also consider, Chloe Grace Moretz looked fucking fantastic in that dress, and I will waste the F-bomb on that.
I'm not saying that she doesn't look good. I'm just saying that as a scene, it doesn't make sense.
But that's the reason why it's in there, is because they just wanted her to look good.
But it's a children's movie. Like, you're not, like, Chloe Grace Moretz isn't, anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, you say it's a kid's movie, and yet us three adults.
hey, listen here.
Here's the thing about movies meant for children. Yes, if it entertains a child...
Then it's
fine. That's good. That's fine. And I'm never gonna fault something for that. But the thing about entertainment that's made for children is that it is made by adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the goal of anybody, especially with Tom and Jerry, because Tom and Jerry is such a universally appealing property, that this movie should be for everybody.
Yeah.
It should be like friendly for kids, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
But don't insult. I guess my thing is
don't insult your adult audience.
Yeah, and also don't insult your audience of kids, because kids are smarter than people give them credit for.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when movies like this are just like a bunch of noise, and just a bunch of nothingness and empty, vapid things that happen like that with no real rhyme or reason, then, you know, maybe a kid will enjoy watching it, but it's not going to leave a lasting impression.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other than the sets in the hotel, because again, the hotel looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that set, the only other thing that I have anything good to say about it is the wedding. The actual wedding at the very end.
Uh-huh.
Very pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, it had a lot of really pretty colors.
Looking at the disaster wedding very roughly, and not entirely terribly informed on it, but I can, like, it's a very traditional Indian wedding, which mm-hmm. they did very well, from my opinion. That opinion doesn't hold much water, but it had a lot of the right attire. It had a lot of, like, the right atmosphere. Indian weddings are huge, because mm-hmm. you've got entire families there.
Yeah, which is weird, because she says, all I wanted was a small Indian wedding. I was like, I'm pretty sure there's no such thing as a small Indian wedding.
Yeah, I think our definition of a small Indian wedding is very different to what the actual definition is. I think the ending movie was exactly what she wanted, which was, it literally was just family. It wasn't
And Kayla and the hotel owner and Tom and Jerry and
also consider, like, the disaster wedding had, like, a Michelin star chef apparently, and like a ton of, like, New York socialites. So it wasn't actually her wedding, but really a wedding for
that's
New York.
Fair. Yeah.
Also worth noting that this movie's concepts of a small or large Indian wedding were probably not come up with by Indian writers.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Throwing
them the smallest bone, it was nice for them to make Preeta a woman of color and have it be an Indian wedding, something that was important to her culture. But that is the smallest of small bones to throw them. It's not perfect or great on any sort of front.
Yeah. And also, what was with the animation on the kerfuffle, as I like to call it, where, like, the animals are just, like, getting sucked in
to it,
whether they want to or not.
Oh, yeah.
It was super weird, and I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Like, you just get this mishmash of stuff, and it turns into a cloud like it does in the Looney Tunes, and that's fine. But then this cloud of nothing has the power to just suck in objects now? Like, what?
And the thing's getting, it looks really bad, too.
It looks bad. Yeah. It looks horrible. Like,
it looked like a hairball.
Yeah, it really does. And when you take these like the CGI elephants that get sucked in, these CGI elephants already don't look the best. And then you're stretching them as they're being pulled in, so then they look worse.
Yeah.
You're just, to me, it just really seemed like they had an idea of what it was supposed to look like, and it honestly, it looks half finished to me.
Yeah,
like the animation, that's just how it looks to me. It looks like they just kind of threw it in there and it was like, ah, it's good.
I can understand that.
It didn't click with me. Nothing in this movie visually, cinematography was
meh.
It was a movie.
Yeah, it was very...
It was shot with a camera.
Yeah, it was very, like, every conversation in the movie, it's over the right shoulder. That's the only camera angle we ever get during conversations,
shot
really.
Shot.
Yeah.
It's just showing one actor's face, and then the other actor's face, and the other actor's face.
Yeah.
And then the other actor's face.
Yeah. Or talking on radio while walking down long hallway, or two people in one shot, and then we pan over to Kayla. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing interesting.
There are some interesting points, but it's the points where only the animated characters are on screen.
Right.
Like the scene where Tom is trying to get through Jerry's window at the hotel, which is a scene we already mentioned that we really like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that when the animated characters are left alone and they're just interacting with the environment, I think that looks good.
Yeah,
I personally think that is where the movie shines visually. Because that scene is... You know what? Also, that scene's pretty to look at, I think.
The scene where he breaks into the window and then yeah. they chase each other around the hotel.
Yeah. And the, you know, there's more interesting, not necessarily camera work, but like the composition of the shots is a lot more dynamic because they don't have to worry about framing humans into the shot.
Yeah. They can just kind of drag the camera wherever they need it to go.
Yeah.
While these booby traps are making the chandelier mm-hmm. fall and the TV break. And yeah.
Especially considering that this movie is not demanding anything physically from its real life cast.
Yeah.
So.
And like you said, like most of the chase scenes are really fun as long as it's just Tom and Jerry on the screen. Mm-hmm. Like that's fine with me. And I'm not even going to say that because even the scene with Toots where she kind of tries to, like, I would have really liked to have seen that explored a little bit more. Oh, I guess I'll get to that in the writing. But
yeah.
But looking, like you said, as long as it was the animated characters, but anytime the animated characters were on screen at the same time as the real life cast, it just didn't work. It didn't click. And that was 90% of the movie. Yeah.
And there's way too many scenes where the animated characters aren't on screen at all. Mm-hmm. And it's just the boring human cast.
Yeah.
And it's actually really funny because if you look, this is like a really big technical goof. It's the worst I noticed it the most during the scene on the roof where she's like, you guys need to learn how to coexist. I'm going to call you a car tomorrow. You're going to go do all this stuff. She like keeps looking down instead of up to where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So her vision of where she's looking is actually changing.
Yeah.
Because she just keeps forgetting that Tom and Jerry are supposed to be at eye level with her, but she keeps looking down like they're standing in front of her.
Yeah. And I will say, to give her credit, for most of the movie, I think she does fine because she has that. I'm pretty sure they probably gave her the right height for at least Tom to talk to.
But they never really showed where Jerry was at.
No, yeah.
Well, I mean, all you gotta do to talk to Jerry is go like this, as long as he's standing on the ground. Yeah.
I mean, she has more scenes with Tom than she does with Jerry. And I think with most of them, her eye level is mostly appropriate.
Yeah. Like I said, it's only I only even really noticed it when it was on the roof. She changes a couple of times, and I'm like,
I was also going to say with Jerry, you also got to consider, like, he may be little, so he may be looking down, but, like, is your chin angled up so you're looking straight across? Because is he further out or is he right up close?
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. like, it's a tiny little detail to nitpick, but it's, like, it's still something you got to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with these...
Especially if you're trying to convince that someone actually is in the scene with her.
With these live-action animated hybrid movies, that's always been, I think, a really big problem.
Yeah.
And I think the only movie that is pretty much perfect about it is Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where the effect of the animated characters being on screen is so seamless.
Mm-hmm.
It holds up so well. And part of that is because they didn't just have the actors act against nothing and then animate them later. They had on-set references that they used for staging of the characters and for lighting so that they can make sure that they actually looked like they were really there.
Mm-hmm.
Or for Richard Williams, who animated that.
I quote Jessica Rabbit all the time. I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way.
Well, one of my favorite all-time movies, by the way,
Roger Rabbit.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and so pretty much every movie that's tried this since then, especially with I guess they're not hand-drawn in this movie, but they're supposed to appear hand-drawn. Mm-hmm. I guess just doesn't look good. They look so flat in this world without any regard for how the real world would affect their lighting and affects, like, just it looks bad.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I feel like they look unfinished, because they're 3D models.
Yeah.
But like you said, the light never changes on them. They never shift depending on whether it's night or daytime. They're always bright. They're always,
they're their own personal spotlight.
Right. But if, you know, that wasn't going to change, then they should have just been 2D.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
because then it would have made more sense, because 2D is just going to stay. Yeah.
And I get that we wouldn't have been able to get the scene with the elephants and stuff like that, but also the movie didn't need that anyway. No.
Well, you can still supplement traditional animation with CGI and make it look seamless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stop motion movies do that all the time, and people don't notice.
I'm just saying, like, Preeta writing and Ben writing in on the elephant, that wouldn't, I don't think would have looked good if all the animals were 2D animated rather than 3D. Mm.
They could have made it work. I think they could have made
it
work.
I'm sure they
could
have.
It would have been odd, but it would have worked, yeah. Especially since, like, if they just embrace, like, they tried to embrace the oddness of the movie by having, like, with them, all animals being animated.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it feels like at the same time, like, they're trying to make it so this is the normal of the entire movie. At the same time, they're kind of fighting against it in a way. I don't know how best to phrase this.
It doesn't feel like the human actors are living in a world where these animated characters exist.
Yes, it feels like they're acting around it.
Yeah, it feels like they're living in our world where everything is normal. And then...
it just happens.
Yeah, and then when animated characters are on screen, they were just like, okay, I guess this is normal.
Yeah,
but I don't act like it's normal, but it's normal.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. It felt like they were trying to drive home so hard that, like, the way all of this happening was normal. Especially because you get Chloe's line at the beginning when she's losing, like, when she's getting fired from her job, or when she quits from it, however you want to dictate it. She's just like, it's a cat and mouse situation. You know not to get in the middle of that. Which is such a, like, one-off line that makes you think, like, oh, this is just normal. This stuff sort of happens. But then just the way they act doesn't fit in with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, yeah, there's a big disconnect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, honestly, that's all I have. There's nothing extraordinary about it. It's very run-of-the-mill. There's some really pretty colors at the end. Some of the costuming looks okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very unremarkable visually, cinematographically.
Cinematically. Let's talk about the music.
I do want to talk about one little...
yeah, that's... I forgot that's my... Yeah.
We can talk about your thing first.
Yeah, just a little detail I want to note it. Like, I just want to talk about, which I think they kind of did okay, but at the same time, I just didn't like it. I don't like how they dress Chloe for most of... So, in the beginning, when she's just in her regular clothes as Kayla, like, she looks nice. She's pretty. As she's, like, in her hotel attire... God damn it, guys. When she's in her hotel attire trying to pretend to be, like, the event manager, I do not like how she dresses. She looks clunky. She doesn't look comfortable. She doesn't look like herself the entire movie. But then you get to the end of, like, the second attempt at the wedding, and she actually looks a lot better and looks more comfortable and sure of herself. And I guess that's kind of a... I guess it was a detail they did, possibly. I don't want to give them credit for that. I think they just messed up on her hotel attire and lucked out at the end.
I feel like that might be the point, but like you said, I don't want to
give them the benefit of the satisfaction.
Yeah, the satisfaction of knowing, oh, you did a good job.
You did. You kept one thing consistent in your story.
Is that everything you had?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. Yeah, the music. Way too much hip-hop.
Oh.
Yeah.
What is with the music choices in this film?
This movie tried to be hip and cool, and it didn't need to be.
I wonder how much it cost them to have the John Legend reference.
What was the budget? $79 million?
Yeah.
Probably 75.
That's why the 78 movie, and a half.
That's why the rest of the movie was so bad.
Yeah, that's fair.
You just get the one billboard. You don't actually get to see him in the movie.
I don't think there's any John Legend music in this movie anyway.
Nope. There is no, like, that is the one reference to John Legend you get. I thought maybe, like, oh, maybe John Legend did some of the, like, the Tom voiceover
or something like that.
Nope.
He did nothing. Not at all. They paid for the name. Yeah. That's it.
It's like they could have done any of, like, the actual artists of music they used throughout the entire film, but
no.
And then the choices of music don't make sense.
Tom and Jerry.
They don't make no sense.
Every time they played a song, it would rip me straight out.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
The antics that happen on screen.
I just wanted the Benny Hill theme the entire time.
That would have been funny.
Would have been great.
Yeah.
But, like, it's so weird, especially because, like, I know, like, this genre of music will probably still be around in 10 years, but not the way that it is right now. Mm-hmm. And so now when you watch, if anybody's, I don't know who's going to be watching this 10 years from now, but if you watch this movie 10 years from now, it's going to feel incredibly dated, mm-hmm. not just with a lot of other things that date this movie, but the music is just going to take you straight out of it.
I would never take a date to this movie.
Shut up. But like, because with the original, like, I know classical music is not in style now.
Even though it should be.
Yeah.
Even though it's great. But that is what fits with, like, the silent cartoon slapstick comedy the most. Because it doesn't need to have pop hooks, because it's just there to complement the animation.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you, it's basically put into this movie to have popular music.
Yeah.
You, which, by the way, I haven't heard any of these songs. I don't know who they were by.
Yeah.
Nope. I don't know who listens to them.
Nope.
Nobody.
Maybe it's just us, though.
Maybe.
Maybe we're just so out of the loop.
Maybe.
We're old people.
But yeah, none of the decisions visually or sound, basically anything you take in with your senses, was good. It had a couple of shining moments, like you said, the scene where Tom tries to get into the hotel room. Are you okay?
Auto-tune Tom.
And auto-tune Tom.
So
you actually look like you're bad. In pain right now.
I have a personal Letterboxd account that I use to review movies. The only sentence I used in my review of this movie was
Auto-tune
Tom will haunt my dreams for weeks to come. And I stand by that.
Yeah.
I think about that scene daily. And I'm disturbed each and every time. I just think, how could they do this?
Look how they massacred my boy.
This is outrageous. It's unfair.
Why does it always come back to Star Wars?
How can you be a Tom and Jerry movie and also have auto-tune?
Okay, well, on that note, any other notes from you guys other than auto-tune Tom?
I don't think we'll ever mentally, emotionally, or physically ever recover from auto-tune Tom.
Oh, and I don't expect you to. I just expect you to bury it deep down and move on.
No, I swear auto-tune Tom will just kill the podcast. We'll never be able to talk about anything other than auto-tune fucking Tom. I'm gonna explicit tag.
I'm going to get to the point where I finally feel... And like it's gonna haunt me, and it's gonna traumatize me for years and years. Ugh. And then I'll finally get to a point where I feel like I'm okay, and I'll go out and like I'll hear auto-tune and I'll just break down in tears. Why Tom and Jerry?
Why
Tim Story? Why did you do this to me? Couldn't you just have stopped making movies with Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer?
You gave us shirtless Chris Evans in the beginning when we needed it. And then you just went downhill from there.
I've lost all control. I have...
Can we start every episode with the clip of auto-tune
Tom?
I'm telling you, it would be the death of the podcast.
Okay. So, moving on from auto-tune Tom. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
No.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
All right, thank you guys for listening to Slap Or Not.
This is us signing off one last time. But before we go, here's auto-tune Tom.
Oh my God. Somebody help me. I can't breathe. Okay.
Yeah, I'll breathe into your lungs with some auto-tune.
Here, I'll fix this. I'll get you guys completely off topic. I'll meet you at Stoop.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
The Stoop scene, but it's auto-tuned.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break here because I physically feel like I'm going to die. We will be right back. Please enjoy this word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with you shortly. All right. A voice vocoder, an Instagram post, and an ad break later, we're back. Boy, that was quite the break that we just had there. I don't usually like to talk about the breaks. But
check out the Instagram if you want to know what we were going through. I recorded a video.
But boy howdy, we're here.
Oh man, what a good time.
Oh my god. All right. Well, let's get into the story notes here before I go completely insane.
I take back everything I said about Auditude, Tom. Just kidding, it still sucks.
Oh yeah, it's god awful.
Okay.
All right.
We are in your segment now, Shelby.
Shelbster.
Fun facts, guys. All those notes were just on the actual movie. I don't really have too many notes about the story because I have one word for it, and it was awful.
Oh, I've got notes.
Well, whip them out. Come on.
Sorry.
You. It's just so bad, my dudes, my guys, my friends. It's so bad. The story is not consistent. I don't care about the people. Preeta was the only important part that I actually cared about because pretty woman, woman of color, and Indian weddings, which are always gorgeous. Michael Pena, awesome, love him. Didn't want him in this movie because he does not play a villain very well.
I don't think he meshes. He meshes better than some of the other actors.
Yeah.
Can I?
Go for it. Hit me.
One actor. There is one actor in this movie that would have done so well as the lead human actor in this movie, and it's Ken Jeong, who has a very small role as the cook in the hotel, and I cannot fathom with any brain cell in my mind why anybody didn't cast him as in a role that would give him more to do with Tom and Jerry when he is by far the most animated actor in this cast. And he has like five lines.
Yeah.
I can already tell you the story, like if they had done like a Ratatouille type story, like, or just something where it's like a rat in the kitchen, the chef hunting him down, hiring Tom to help out. Yeah. That would have been such a better story than what we got with the wedding planner and then Chloe Moritz and all just.
Ugh. That's how I thought it was going to be when I found out that Ken Jeong was in this, because I couldn't imagine that they would cast somebody like him and only have him play a super minor role.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
exactly what they did.
Yeah, and I agree with you. The story would have made a lot more sense to me if Ken Jeong had been the main human antagonist of this movie. We don't really need Kayla. We don't need Preeta and Ben. We don't need
we really just don't need that entire human cast. If they wanted to do a good Tom and Jerry movie, it would have been Tom, Jerry, someone going after
and Ken Jeong.
And Ken Jeong is by far the funniest member of this cast, and he gets nothing to do.
And have Spike be Ken Jeong's dog, like if you need Spike there.
Or even like it's still, we could have still had like the wedding thing going on and like Kayla and all that sort of stuff. But it felt like they were trying to force these, like, really, like, B plots. Like, literally, like, the sightest of side plots into being a main actual plot for the movie. Yeah, like, we could have had the wedding why Ken Jeong is so, like, stressed out. And then we could have had, like, Kayla in the background being like, oh, I'll hire a cat for you. And
it's like, what?
And then Ken Jeong being like, what? Why do we need a cat? Just catch it.
I think even putting that aside, this movie completely wastes the potential of its premise because think about this. Somebody's pitching you a Tom and Jerry movie. So Jerry is freeloading in this hotel and stealing things from the guest. And Tom is hired as one of the hotel staff so that they can try to catch the mouse. Doesn't that sound like a really funny idea?
It does.
And they don't do anything with it because you get like 5 minutes of that being the focus.
Or you could have even had like they had the whole like Jerry stole the ring by accident to furnish his apartment. Could have built off that with Jerry stealing more and more and then have like a heist type situation where they're trying to steal back the stuff.
Well, see, but that's the thing is that he doesn't steal the ring by accident because he looks at it and he goes, oh, I want that thing.
Yeah. Like, that's the kind of character Jerry is.
Jerry just kept stealing stuff and they need somebody to come stop him. It just.
Yeah. this movie's story was a mess.
The way they could have done the story so much better is they were like, we're going to try and take a serious plot and make it funny. Or like, we're going to take a funny plot and like do it serious in some moments and stuff like that. They should have just taken a serious idea and just ran with it, and how dumb and stupid they could have gotten it. Like a heist situation with Jerry like lowering down, and like when he was chasing Preto, when he lowered down, like I giggled at that because that's the shenanigans I wanted.
Yeah. This movie is 20% Tom and Jerry and 80% Disney Channel original movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It really is. And yeah, it was a bummer.
5 minutes or six minutes into this, and we're just yelling about the plot. Well,
so one of the things that I think could have been an improvement, because I thought it was really interesting when they were doing it, because to me, it's never been like Tom is like outwardly trying to murder Jerry. Right?
Yeah.
It's just like, that's just what he does.
Keep them off.
Right. But that's what we got from Toots, was that she was just like, I want to murder this mouse.
Yes.
So I think it would have been kind of cool to do like a Toots wants to murder Jerry. Tom wants to catch Jerry and get him out of the hotel, but also stop Toots from murdering Jerry because that's his best friend. And then Spike is also there.
Just
being Spike.
Being Spike, being an absolute lad.
Yeah. Spike is like the original himbo.
Spike walks so Kronk could run.
Yes. Tell me I'm wrong, all right?
You're not. That's the worst part.
I'm aware. I have these kinds of opinions all the time.
I'm aware of the effect I have on women.
I'm aware of the effect I have on women. It's fine.
Well, it sucks because I feel like a lot of these big Hollywood executives, when they look at these animated properties, especially ones that were like originally presented in short form, because the Tom and Jerry shorts are like, what, like 6 to 10 minutes each?
Yeah, they're not long.
Something like that. Because
there's like three of them edited into an episode.
Yes. Right?
Yeah, usually, if you were to watch it on like Boomerang or something.
Boomerang.
But I feel like big Hollywood executives look at that and they say, well, they can work for a short amount of time, but they can't carry a movie, so we got to add all this filler bullshit to pad the movie out.
But you don't. But
here's the thing.
Can carry a movie.
Tom and Jerry absolutely can carry a movie. First of all, they've carried like dozens of movies.
They've carried tons of,
The direct-to-video movies are not very good, but to be fair, this is not the first theatrical Tom and Jerry movie. There was a movie in 1992.
Wasn't that supposed to be a sequel to the 1992 movie, or at least like a spiritual sequel?
No, it's nothing like it.
Yeah.
Tom and Jerry both talk in the 1992
Ooh,
one.
Yikes!
No.
Yeah. And it's also a musical.
Yikes!
Is there auto-tune Tom? Then why are we even talking about
it? Unfortunately, no. But I think this movie's better than that. If that's
valid,
any sort of
fair,
compliment.
Valid.
But I got off topic. Anyway, Tom and Jerry are so charming, and they're so charismatic, and they're so fun to watch, that you can just keep creating situations for them and raising the stakes in a movie over the course. It doesn't even have to be that long.
I mean, take into consideration, they had Tom and Jerry and so Tom and Jerry is part of like Looney Tunes, like the big Looney Tunes cast with like Tasmanian Devil.
Well,
like,
it's not. It's separate, actually.
They've put them together in a lot of like early 2000s movies. Looney Tunes Racing. Like there's the Looney Tunes like go to space thing. It's just.
Are you talking about Space Jam?
Not Space Jam. There was another movie with like Martian invading the Earth, and then like I think there is a movie where Tom and Jerry go to freaking Mars.
Yeah, I've seen that
Yes!
one. Yeah.
I knew there was
Looney
a space
Tunes
one.
Aren't in this.
Is Marvin the Martian there?
I think they make reference to him, but I don't think he's actually part of the main cast of
it. There's like a alien princess that falls in love with Jerry.
Yeah.
Because she's like super small too.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And she's like, she tosses them and is like, does anybody know how to fly a spaceship?
Yeah.
And they're like, huh?
What's weirder, Tom and Jerry go to Mars or the Brave Little Toaster goes to Mars?
Tom and Jerry go to Mars. I've never seen the Brave Little Toaster, so.
The Mars, it's weird, but it's actually not that bad.
Okay, okay. Valid.
Back on topic.
Yeah, sorry. They can care. It doesn't even have to be that long. Mm-hmm. You make it like a 75-minute movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would be fine.
Yeah.
They did that with the Winnie the Pooh movie that came out in 2011,
where just it was made it super short.
It was like 66 minutes long or something, and it was good. It didn't need to be longer. It
especially felt, when you're doing
it felt appropriate.
So I imagined, like, while I was watching this, I imagined a movie where, again, they were 2D animated, and Chloe Grace Moretz was still in it. But you could and then you can get whatever no-name actor you want to play the other characters because it's inconsequential. But what if they had only showed her from the knees down, like they do,
like they do with Tom's owner?
Yeah,
and oh, that would have been great. She was Tom's owner. That would have been good.
That would have been funny, actually.
Yeah,
I
hear her voice and you know it's her, but you just don't see it.
Exactly. I think that would have been hilarious, and you can still have her be live action if you really need it to, and then Tom and Jerry can still be the little 2D. But then just make the movie about, like you said, Ken Jeong as the chef.
Yeah.
Again, only from the knees down. I know that's kind of a lot.
No, well, Ken Jeong, they can show the whole thing.
Yeah,
with the physical comedy.
Yeah,
but no Ken other Jeong. Human characters can be in the shot like that.
You have it angled where you see like the hotel owner, like you see his back, and you only see Kim Jeong like full frontal, and you never see the hotel owner's like face or anything.
Ken Jeong full frontal.
But
stop it.
But yeah, there are so many other directions they could have taken this to make it better. And this, I'm like, the human story just doesn't click.
No. I like how we're not actually talking about the actual story of Tom and Jerry, the movie at this point. We're just talking about what it could have been.
Yeah, we're just
because it's bad.
It's so bad.
The plot. So let's talk about the characters. Let's talk about the characters.
Where does Kayla live? How does she survive day to day?
She lives in the dumpster outside the hotel.
She lives in the sewers with the TMNT.
Oh, well, God, like,
my whole point was
the crossover we deserve.
Sorry. Continue, Shelby.
I guess my whole point is, like, they're all like, yeah, like, Kayla's now, like, staying at the hotel, like, stealing free food from the hotel. And it's like, she's got all these nice clothes. She's, like, clearly got a bag. She, like, goes from job to job. Like, where does she live? Like, what is her life like? We never get an idea of what's going on with her. So I'm not sure if I should feel bad for her and feel like I should encourage her to get this job and be like, man, this is a ballsy move. Or if she's like some rich kid in New York, like going job to job, and this is just another one of her cons. Like, I don't know how to feel about her.
I feel like this movie is simultaneously telling us that you need to care about these people.
But also you don't hate them.
But also, they don't matter. So don't worry about them. This is a Tom and Jerry movie. But it does. It can't make up its mind.
Yeah, but then it focuses on the humans for way too long.
Yeah,
it just doesn't balance itself very well, because you can do like, hey, you need to care about these, but they're essentially inconsequential. You can do that, but they did not do it well. This is the most fired up about a movie I've gotten in the podcast.
It took Tom and Jerry for us to get the most riled up.
No, it's okay.
I'll shut up
now. No, you're fine. There was just so much this movie could have been, and it just wasn't, but also I'm not surprised.
Yeah. The Kayla is like, whatever.
Yeah.
She's fine.
Like, literally. Like, that's her character description.
She's
whatever.
Just the whatever main character.
Yeah.
And then you have Terrence, who's played by Michael Pena, and he's...
He threw his all into it.
He's good, and he does have a couple funny lines.
Yes,
actually, I like, he has a line near the beginning where she's faking her like interview, where she's using the other woman's resume.
Yeah,
and she like asks, and she like jokingly asks what the goldfish's position is, and it's a goldfish.
No,
and he's like,
she's like,
it's a goldfish. He does not have an official position.
She doesn't ask what it is. She's like, oh, so this is the manager, or like, this is the head of department for like aquatics or whatever.
Yeah, and he's like,
yeah.
He's like, this is a goldfish.
No. She has no official position. She's a goldfish. Which, that line made me laugh. I actually wrote that one down.
Yeah, I appreciated that.
But like, and he's portrayed as a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he's right.
Yeah.
For most of the most villainous thing he does is just make Tom and Jerry think that
they hate each other.
That they hate each other again. But that's the only thing.
I mean, he ruined a very expensive and lavish wedding.
But did he though? Well, he did.
He premeditated.
He lit the fire that burned the First Order down.
But they fly now.
They fly anyway.
But when he was working at the hotel for most of the movie, he didn't do anything wrong.
No. He was trying to train Kayla. He was like irritated with her because she seemed cocky. Yeah.
And he also knew that something was up.
Which anybody with two eyeballs can tell that there's something up.
And the hotel manager is incredibly inept.
Can we talk about the one character who did know something was up? For sure, 100%, absolutely from the get-go.
Kayla? Joy.
The doorman.
Oh, the doorman, yeah.
Yeah.
He knew!
I think Joy was just blissfully... Joy did not care.
I love her.
Yeah.
I want to give Joy a hug.
Yeah, Joy is one of the best characters.
The doorman looked her straight in the eye and was like,
"And
not my
the hotel manager's such a G."
Yeah. Well, it's Peter, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I meant the doorman.
Oh.
The hotel manager's stupid.
Oh.
Don't talk that way about Peter.
Yeah, don't talk that way about Peter.
No, Peter's great. I love Peter. I just wish that they gave him a better role in this movie.
It's just Peter. Yeah.
He just elevates the movie by extension.
It's just Peter.
Yeah, that's, you know, after Deadpool saves him in the after credit scene of Deadpool 2, this is where Peter's
at.
Yeah,
this is what he got to.
Yeah.
Got up to.
What Peter's doing, yeah.
He was like, go live a low-key life where you just manage weddings and hang out with cartoon animals.
And he's like, done.
What was Deadpool's nickname for him? Sugar Bear?
Go home, Sugar Bear!
Yeah.
Sugar Bear.
I was kind of hoping someone would call him Sugar Bear.
Just go! But we're X-Force! Go home, Sugar Bear. I love it. Anyway.
We keep going off on tangents because we're just talking about better movies.
There's nothing to talk about this movie.
Yeah. Other than the fact that the pacing is really bad, it really made this, 1 hour 41 runtime? Yeah. Is that how long this was?
It's less than that. It was like an hour and a half.
Okay. Yeah. It made it feel like an eternity.
It did.
Like, it was...
Especially so when you're doing the story, like me, pausing and playing every 5 minutes.
Yeah. With the pacing of this movie, they rushed through it, but it made it feel so much more elongated that I, like, literally looked at my phone and was like, I've been sitting here for 45 minutes. Like, are you serious?
Go ahead and swear. I've already dropped two.
Nah, it's fine.
I've already been marking them as explicit, so I mean...
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yes! I can finally... Could swear more. Is that hold off from doing it again?
But the married couple to be, I don't remember their names.
Ben and Preeta.
Mm-hmm. Preeta's okay. She's fine.
Ben is Colin Jost.
Ben, I didn't make a note of it, but I like mentally made a note of it because it was bugging me in the back of my head every time he was on screen. I feel like they really, really wanted Ben to be played by Jason Sudeikis and they couldn't get him. I don't know if that's just me, but he gives, like, the way his character is written and the way that he is acted makes me think of Jason Sudeikis. And I'm just like, this role was written for Jason Sudeikis and he didn't want to do it, so they just cast the next
somebody
best guy.
Else, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean,
Colin Jost and Jason Sudeikis both are SNL alumni, so.
I know that.
Yeah.
It was bugging me.
Yeah.
And also.
Former WWE wrestler, Colin Jost.
Was he a WWE wrestler?
Well, he wrestled at WrestleMania a couple of years ago.
Oh, good for
him. Like a big battle royal.
Good for him.
Yeah. So did Michael Shea.
But Ben's a douchebag.
Yeah.
I hate him. Why is this very kind, very nice woman marrying this prick?
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's talking to Terrence, and Terrence... he says a word, I think he says like hamster or something. He says something about a hamster. And Ben mocks the way he says it in Michael Pena's accent. I don't know if anybody else got that scene, but I had to pause it because I was like, that's racist!
Excuse me, That's racist.
That's racist! And, and he doesn't care about what his wife actually wants or his fiance actually wants.
Nope.
Because he doesn't listen to her.
Nope.
Because he thinks that the way to her heart is just big, extravagant gifts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And there is...
Which we could go into that about how there's just a difference of love.
Yeah. Well, so there's a show that I'm a big fan of. It's called BoJack Horseman. And there is...
I can't believe that BoJack Horseman is coming up in the same sentence as Tom and Jerry.
They're both shows about animals. Anyway, BoJack Horseman's a great show, by the way, for anybody that hasn't seen it. There's a character named Mr. Peanut Butter, who is a golden retriever. And he is in a relationship with a woman named Diane, and his love style is just extravagant gifts. And she doesn't want that, but all he knows how to do is just to buy things and make big, extraordinary...
grand gestures.
Yeah, grand gestures of affection. And it causes problems in their relationship, like it does for Ben and
Preeta
in this movie. Only in this movie... They like have a fight for like 5 minutes and then they go through with it, even though they're very obviously incompatible. Whereas in BoJack Horseman, they get divorced and they stay apart.
Aww. Rough.
Rough. He's a dog. Sorry, I went off on that tangent. It just reminded me of that.
Yeah.
But he goes to these lengths to impress her, and that's not what she wants. And then she finally realizes, this guy is kind of a dick. So I don't want to marry you. Goodbye. And then she leaves.
And then they get married.
And then he's I'm sorry. I didn't know I was doing it. Please forgive me. And she's like, well, accidents happen. And then they get married.
It's Love and Monsters all over again.
Love and Monsters is a good movie, though.
All right.
And then... One other thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Super minor. Doesn't matter. The
Auto-tune Tom.
We're not getting into this again.
No!
The animal control guy looks like Elon Musk.
Yeah.
I didn't notice. I'm going to be honest with you.
A little bit. Just the teeny.
I'll show you later.
Amount.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But as soon as he showed up, I swear, I had to do a spit take because I thought it was Elon Musk.
Wow. Okay, Shelby, since this is your actual topic, is there anything else you would like to add?
Nothing else, really. I got a lot of my energy and rant out, really, with just how much. I'm so sorry.
No, it makes sense. And honestly, when a movie takes the things that you're nostalgic about and stomps on them to this degree, it's really hard.
Yeah, especially because Tom and Jerry isn't really something that you need to have that much story for.
Mm-mm.
The story in Tom and Jerry cartoons is just there is an excuse for slapstick.
They chase.
Yeah.
That's it.
They just try. It's literally a game of cat and mouse. They're just trying to one-up each other.
That's literally
and that's what the appeal is.
Yeah.
That's why they became popular in the first place.
And that's all you needed. I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, you can add story into it, but Tom and Jerry really themselves can't care. Then carry a story as they've done in previous movies and as they've done before, but really it worked with the supplemental cast of really having other Looney Tunes characters having really kind of adult shenanigans going on in the background, that sort of stuff. But really it was it was happening in Tom and Jerry reacting to it rather than everybody else reacting to Tom and Jerry, which I think was why the movie felt odd because it's cat and mouse. You can't really do anything about it. And so,
Well, I think that's partly why something like Looney Tunes lends itself better to being a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for one, the cast of characters is much larger, and they all talk. And they've always been put into different, very unique situations that would...
Mm-hmm.
So, because you can insert them into any story, and they'll work.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that with Tom and Jerry because Tom and Jerry have a very specific appeal.
Very specific dynamic appeal. And if you mess with any element of it, you really throw the whole thing off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree. So,
Can I confess something?
Yeah.
So you guys know Looney Tunes, you know Tweety Bird and his cat. I used to get
Sylvester.
Yeah, I used to get Tom and Sylvester mixed up all the time. I just assumed they were the same cat. I know.
Oh.
Are you saying all cats look the same?
Are you saying that Daffy Duck and Donald Duck, there's no difference?
They're different characters? Used to get them mixed up too.
That's racist.
I actually did genuinely get the, used to get the names mixed up when I was
like, oh my gosh.
I mean, they're both D names, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's I always thought Tweety was a girl, so.
It's the eyelashes.
Yeah. It is the eyelashes, mm-hmm. actually, mm-hmm. and the voice.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
You sound pretty choked up over there. Are you okay?
gotta burn your throat? All
right. I was just thinking. I got lost in a memory for a second, which was my mom told me I had like a little Tweety Bird sticker on my closet wall. She told me she put that up like the day I was born. And nice. So I was just thinking about Tweety Bird and I was thinking about that. Anyways, wholesome moment.
I taught Anta a good movie.
No, you didn't.
I thought the putty cat.
All righty. Well, I think that's it for the story notes, unless mm-hmm. you have anything else or you Nothing have anything else.
I don't like that. Kayla gets her job back at the end.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
Well, yeah, why would she?
But... I would have loved it if they were like, you're a maid now.
Because again, that's how jobs work.
Yeah, that's about it.
All right. Well, I have nothing else to add, so let's just go ahead and jump into Riley's section here.
All right, I don't have a whole lot to talk about. The acting in this movie is really bad.
Yeah.
First of all.
Yeah. What did you think about the casting of Tom as Tom?
I think that was a really bold choice. If it was up to me personally, I think Bugs Bunny would have made a very good Tom.
Yeah. I do agree with the casting choice for Jerry, though.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry's always great no matter who plays him.
You know what? I would have thought of Tweety Bird instead for Tom, for Jerry.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting choice.
But, you know, Tom's performance is very good. He really captures the essence of the actor that played Tom during the 40s cartoons. But he brings a modern spin to it that I think works really well.
Yeah, that auto-tune soon.
Yeah. Except for that. Well, he was dubbed over for that scene, so I can't hold it against him.
Right. Mm. But, you know, his acting during that was really... I can't keep a straight face. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Wow, what a good 60-second joke we squeezed out of that.
Those are the only actors in the movie. The rest of them were cardboard cutouts with voices dubbed over. They might as well be.
Weird. The Corey, honestly, the Chloe Grace Moretz cutout looked like Heather Locklear. But
So obviously, Tom and Jerry do not talk except for the scene where Tom does the autotune singing, and also his shoulder angel and devil talk.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
it's the same voice for all those.
For both.
Yeah.
For those and the autotune, I think it's the same voice.
Oh, good.
I think it is.
I actually do want to touch on the devil angel thing. I thought that was like a really good dynamic to put in there because the devil angel like always tricks the angel into doing something and then he like runs him over with a train or something like that.
Yeah,
and
he's
like, ha ha, loser. Like,
I also thought that was kind of a clever way just to show what Tom's thinking.
Yeah.
Without having him actually talk.
But yeah. But then he's just always like the devil always wins on his shoulder. Yeah. It's so funny.
It reminds me of Kronk. The
yeah,
groove.
I think that's kind of what they were trying to channel in
yeah.
a way.
It's nowhere near as funny, but yeah. it's there.
I mean, it's a common trope, but at the same time, nobody can think of like a devil angel scene without thinking of Kronk from Emperor's New
yeah.
Groove.
Yeah, at least people from our generation.
Yeah,
I feel like
which are the only people that listen to this podcast? No, I'm kidding.
It's just us and Goldfish.
And Matt's mom. Shout out to her, our biggest fan. Hooray,
thank you.
Thank you.
We love you. Yeah. I don't know you, but I love you.
Wow, you guys just sound more convincing.
Woo! Woo! No. I'm taking this away from you. Let's go.
Chloe Grace Moretz mm-hmm. is the lead actress in this movie. She, the last major movie that I recognized from her was the Addams Family movie, the animated one. That came out in 2019.
Oh, really?
She was in that. I think she
played
was
Wednesday.
I think
wasn't
she played Wednesday.
Yeah, that would make
I
sense.
Did not hear very good things about that movie.
Oh.
I want to watch it though. Adam's Family.
I know it was. I know she was in Kick-Ass.
Yes.
That was forever ago though.
I know.
Yeah. Let's.
What else has she been in since then?
I'm pulling it up.
She was in a show called Gaslight recently. I think that was last year, which I don't know about.
Is it about Jack the Ripper?
No, probably
she was not. In Addams Family. She was in Red Shoes and Seven Dwarfs. She was the English voice for that movie. Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. She was in a, she was a character named Shelby.
Oh,
weird.
It's perfect.
She was the English voice for Princess Kaguya in the Studio Ghibli Tale of Princess Kaguya.
Mm. Oh, was she?
She was in The Equalizer.
She was in The Equalizer. Mm-hmm. That's what I always see her in because they always play The Equalizer on TNT on Wednesday nights right before AEW Dynamite.
That's a very specific set of knowledge that you have there, Justin.
I do. I watch wrestling and then The Equalizer is just on and she's in like the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, but Equalizers wasn't. It was in 2014. Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising when she played Shelby was in 2016. She's done a little bit here and there, but it really looks like she just hasn't been into the light in a while.
I know a few years ago she ended up canceling a lot of the roles that she was supposed to play because she wanted to readjust the trajectory of her career.
And then she was in Tom and Jerry.
But she's been in some more like indie movies lately.
Which makes sense.
She was in like this art house movie that came out a year or two ago that I heard good things about, but I haven't watched.
I feel like we go through Shelby like rambling about stuff, but I feel like we go through so many female actors where like a lot of times we get them confused with each other or we're like, how long has it been since we've seen her? When was the last thing she's done with this? That sort of conversation. And yet we still have the same consistent male actors throughout the years. Like, even if they're not in the type of genre that you typically watch, you'll still hear about them because they're doing roles or constantly
in. Yeah.
And I just think about Kate Winslet and how she was pretty much bullied out of being in popular films after Titanic and fell back onto indie films, probably because she could get treated better and do what she wanted and take the role how she wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so it makes me worry what happened to Chloe to make her fall back onto more indie films.
Sure.
I think she was just worried about being typecast in more like quirky or not necessarily family friendly movies, but like,
well, see, and I think the exact opposite. I think she was afraid of being typecast as like the hit girl.
That's fair.
Type of
thing.
Cause while she did great as hit girl, I would not want to be in a role like that young.
Mm-hmm. Hell no, I agree.
I mean, like, one movie I can recall from her doing when she was itty bitty was Hugo, which was the movie, which I think was just remembering how she was in that film. I think that was something she loved doing.
And
she was an excellent and amazing actor in it. And she was probably only 14 at the time.
Imagine working with Martin Scorsese when you're that young.
Ugh. No, thank you.
I like Martin Scorsese.
He seems kind of weird.
He's a good director, though.
Not like Tarantino.
Hugo's quite good, by the way.
Yeah, Hugo is one of my favorite films. Based on interviews that I saw for that movie, sorry, side tangent. Based off interviews, she actually really appreciated working with him because he was so hands-on and could help her and direct her really well.
That's fair.
Yeah,
and that was something she really needed and appreciated.
Yeah. Great, great director. The last thing I saw her in personally was Dark Shadows, which was
super forever good.
Ago. That's the Johnny Depp 2012. Movie,
yeah. It's okay.
It's so bad, but it's so good.
I haven't seen it since it came out. I remember thinking like that it was really mediocre, but it was fun.
Yeah.
It's
so weird.
Hot take.
Okay.
Voice crack. Hot take. I don't think Chloe Grace Moretz is that good of an actor.
I think it's been a while for her.
Interesting.
I think that she's like, her performances tend to be really flat and really, not necessarily unexpressive, but unconvincing, I guess.
My opinion is she tends to be stiff.
She's very stiff, yeah.
I think also taking into consideration, she's acting to nothing, which is... We'll test the best actor anyways, and there's so many people who can do it better, but at the same time, she's coming back into the light, going into a really big movie as the lead actress. I think we need to cut her a little slack on that.
Well, she, even in the scenes where she's acting against real people, it's about the same, in my opinion.
Yeah.
She's just like, I don't know, the way she delivers dialogue is like really wooden and...
Well, you also got to remember at the same time, though, I'm Chloe Defense Squad right now. You got to remember at the same time, though, that even if she's not acting with Tom or Jerry, there's always an animated animal in most scenes.
Well, okay. So,
because you've either got Spike in most scenes or the fish when she's in the hotel office.
The main problem I find with it is like, because I do agree that she does seem wooden in this movie, but I do think it's because of the CGI, but it's not always in part of the CGI. Because the scenes with the person who's supposed to be her love interest,
Oh, yeah.
They're very wooden. They have absolutely zero chemistry together.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, even in the scenes where there are animated characters present, since, there's a lot of them, she's not interacting with them in a lot of them.
Yeah, but I think the reason why I think about it is she's not sure at what point they're going to enter the scene or if they're going to enter the scene. So we have the fish in the hotel office, and she's like telling them like, "Hey, let's." I don't think she's convincing them to hire Tom, but I think it's when Terrence is getting fired, and she's just like, she seems like she's like bundled up, like she's not sure like, is Tom gonna enter in through this direction? Are they gonna have a shot where it's me in the background and I have to react to the fish moving in the bowl?
Right,
that's fair,
and that also falls on. I mean, it also falls on the director at that point, because the director is supposed to tell her all this information.
Mm-hmm. Which he probably did, but they probably, things change in post, especially with things like this.
Yeah.
And maybe when they were going to have the fish do like a little like jump out of the bowl and she was going to react to that, maybe they decided, you know what, that doesn't work. That's too much animation. We just want you to like look over at it quickly instead of like lean back or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to signal when those things happen so she knows how to react or at least get the timing of the scene down.
Yeah.
Regardless.
I think you're both right in this scenario. Yeah.
Regardless, I've never been that impressed with Chloe as an actress, personally.
I agree.
Like, she's fine. I don't think she's awful. I just think, man, she does not have that much going for her as an actress, unfortunately. The other big lead would be Michael Pena, who...
let's get Catherine Newton in here.
Most recently that I recognize, he was in Fantasy Island last year, which I heard was awful. I haven't seen. And then he was also in Dora and the Lost City of Gold or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I've heard was also bad. Michael Pena, just not picking good movies to be in.
The last good movie he was in.
I feel like his characters are always good in the movies, but the movies themselves are always bad.
That's fair.
I would agree.
Ant-Man.
He was amazing in Ant-Man.
Last big, like, good movie he was in was Ant-Man the Wasp, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I like him in Ant-Man. I know a lot of people are kind of annoyed by his comedy style.
Yeah, his shtick.
Oh, I don't mind it. I think he's funny.
I relate to it as an unmedicated ADHD person.
But he's fine in this. He's one of the better actors in this movie. I'll say that.
Yeah.
He always feels... like he is putting in as good of a performance as he can, even though he doesn't really mesh very well a lot of the time with the way, because this movie goes back and forth between having a really zany tone and a really Disney Channel tone, which I mentioned before. And he works when it's getting a little bit more zany, but most of the scenes he's in are not those.
Yeah.
So it's a very big disconnect.
Yeah.
And I feel like, sort of like my statement with Ken Jeong, where I think he would have been a much better choice for the lead human actor.
Yeah.
Michael Pena could have worked really well. I think he does work well, mostly. But he could have worked a lot better if he was mostly with Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
And less with the hotel staff and everybody.
Yeah.
But he's a good actor. I like him. And then there's the hotel manager,
Peter,
who is Peter. Do we know his name?
Henry Dubrow.
Henry Dubrow?
So it's spelled Dubruo or US, but I know it's French,
Dubois.
But I cannot pronounce French names to save my own life.
Yeah, sometimes. You're fine.
Peter. Peter Croissant is.
Don't.
Jimmy.
Stop! I will kick your butt.
Okay.
He is fine. Acting's fine.
Yeah.
Pretty much. The only person I really complain about is Chloe, because I wish that I liked her more, but I don't. And then everybody else is fine. Ken Jeong's really funny in the few lines that he has.
But he doesn't get enough.
But he doesn't get enough. And he only has like 5 lines.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure he said the gender fluid line that I loved so much.
Ken Jeong?
Yeah.
I think he does, actually. Yeah.
I don't know. But
yeah. Not
I don't
lot.
Have a whole lot to say. It was directed by Tim Story, like you mentioned, who is most well known for his mid-2000s Fantastic Four movies, which I am not a fan of at all.
The first one's okay.
Yeah, you like the first one. I don't like the first one.
I wouldn't say I like the first one. I just said the first one's okay.
I hate what they do with Doctor Doom, but I digress. And
MCU do better. Anyway.
And he's also directed more movies than you would expect with Ice Cube and Kevin Hart.
Did he do Are We There Yet? Oh.
No.
Oh, okay.
But he did the Ride Along movies, and he's done, like, I don't remember exactly which ones they were, but he's most of his movies have either Kevin Hart or Ice Cube or both. It's very odd. But you know what? More power to you, Tim Story.
Fair enough.
You found what works.
Yeah. I don't think he's a very good director.
Yeah.
Judging from the movies that I've seen that he's made, I don't think he's awful, but I think he has a very specific kind of mediocrity to his filmmaking.
Yeah.
And this is probably one of the worst ones that he's done.
So
I don't have much to say, honestly. There's not a whole lot to say.
Yeah.
I could go in, like, I could talk about the history of Tom and Jerry if you want. You can bring up the Wikipedia article.
Nah, I mean, I think people kind of understand what Tom and Jerry is. It's classic. I grew up watching them. My dad grew up watching them. And
yeah, I feel like most people are at least somewhat aware, or have at least seen some Tom and Jerry in their lives.
You're aware of who Tom and Jerry are. So I don't think we necessarily need to get into that.
But I think that's about all I have. Sorry, I don't have a whole lot.
No, there's really not a whole lot to discuss. I was having a hard time, even with my segment, just thinking, like, what is there to talk about visually?
Nothing.
No. Like,
the most interesting thing that this movie could do is the animation, and, you know,
they didn't
it doesn't mesh very well.
Yeah.
So
I guess we'll just move into our final thoughts and announcements for next week. I did A, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so that's me. So this movie is obviously a nap. Okay, so basically what it does is it's a kids movie that isn't for kids. It's more of a nostalgia movie, and that kind of gets muddled in what it's trying to be, because it's trying to appeal to kids but also give it the nostalgia factor. But the new kids that are being introduced to Tom and Jerry through this new medium are not going to understand that nostalgia factor, and it just gets lost in the shuffle. It gets very muddy. It's unrecognizable. It's not enough nostalgia to keep the older fans interested. It's not interesting enough to look at to keep the kids interested. It's not good, in my opinion.
Yep. I've said it all. There's nothing else really much I can say past just getting angry at the movie. I get it. It's for kids, and I can respect that and understand that. But if you're going to make a movie for kids, you can at least make a good movie for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie is just a nap, and I really wish I did sleep through it.
Very, very clearly a nap from me. I did not enjoy watching this movie. But I did experience a range of emotions watching it, from annoyance, anger, boredom, sadness.
Auto-tune Tom.
Auto-tune Tom is its own emotion.
You're ecstatic, Joy. You didn't know. You're good.
Oh, okay.
I think, because like I said, Tom and Jerry is a very universally appealing franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And if this was their attempt to market it to a new generation, man, did it fail. Or maybe it didn't. I don't know. Maybe it will. Maybe it'll be super popular with kids. Maybe like 5 years from now, you'll see people growing up with this movie, and they'll be like, this was my childhood. This is the best like one of the best movies of my childhood. And I'll be like,
oh, hey, come here, watch this.
Yeah, it's bad. I wish it was better. I love Tom and Jerry. Instead of watching this on HBO Max, they have almost every Tom and Jerry cartoon made from the 40s through the 60s on HBO Max.
Yeah, just go watch the actual Tom and Jerry. Watch those instead. Yeah. So, and again, just because we feel this way, it does not devalue the work that the director, the actors, the animators put into it. We just didn't like it.
Yeah,
it's... It wasn't enough for us, unfortunately. And I really wish that they did something that kept me interested in it, but
yeah, they just didn't. But regardless, yeah, thank you to everybody that worked on this movie for
trying.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us material to talk about on our podcast. Yeah. We appreciate what you've made for us.
I'm sure most of you worked very hard.
Yes.
And I appreciate you. And I love you.
So speaking of movies that probably worked very hard, the next movie we're going to be doing is the Christopher Nolan directed Tenet from September or August 2020. Yeah. I don't remember.
We've been putting off this movie for the last like three episodes.
Because we keep coming up with ideas. So yeah. I guess take it or leave it. But we do have to start working backwards as of right now. So we will be back with Tenet hopefully next week. And who drew first last time?
I think it was me. I had tech last time.
Remember, so we went ABC last time.
Oh, did we? Yeah. Okay, so then I get to choose first. Oh, we were croissant. If I get A again, I am going to switch because I've done A a lot.
Yeah, you shall.
And I did not. Okay. You fuck. All right. So for Tenet, I got the script, writing, world building, plot, fun stuff.
Nice.
Oh. I got cinematography, the A, the first one.
Ooh, you're going to have fun.
So cinematography, color grading, visuals, music, everything. Good stuff. Fun stuff.
There's going to be some wahs.
A lot of wahs. The Hans Zimmer score, I'm assuming.
I think so.
Yeah.
I got real world circumstances, actors, performances. Pretty much, I just get to enjoy the film and talk about the people later.
Woo!
Hooray!
Yay! Well, as usual, thank you guys so much for joining us. We have a blast recording these for you, and we hope that you have a blast listening to them. So please stay safe out there. We love you. Goodbye.
Have a good night, folks.